Meeple Night, Episode 15, a podcast develops its reputation. Welcome to Meeple Night, a podcast about board games, past, present, and future. In today's episode, we discuss our recent plays, review the Role Player Fiends and Familiars expansion from Thunderworks Games, and finish off by discussing what we would buy on a Target shopping spree this holiday season. I'm Andrew Caprell, and here's my co-host, Josh Knight.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight's episode is going to have a few sponsors that aren't actually sponsors of the show. The first one I'd like to highlight in our banter section is Ginger Beer.
Ginger Beer, I knew it.
Because I randomly brought a ginger beer over to Andrew's house to play games last night, and coincidentally, he had just purchased a whole case of ginger beer from Sam's Club.
Yeah, and that was the first time I had ginger beer.
Yeah, so what are the chances of that? But with that smooth transition that I'm sure we'll have even smoother ones later, question remains is, what have you been up to, man?
Yeah, well, geez, this is the first time I think we've recorded right after playing, and, you know, it had been so long that we'd seen each other that I just basically told you everything that was going on with my life.
Yeah.
Because we were just, man, it was nice to play together again, and, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. Mm. But, yeah, I mean, I guess for the listeners' sake, we got a new minivan.
Yay!
We had a Chevy Traverse, but we wanted to upgrade it to the minivan. We have three kids, so, you know, it's just getting to the point where having two cars in the garage is not really working if you can't have one door slide open. And Ava's super into it. Sorry. She loves the gray van. She when I came home, she went out to go see it, and she was crying when she had to leave the car.
Wow.
Landon woke up and she's like, "Can I show Landon the gray van?" I was like, "Okay."
Oh, we did. Cute.
We went through the same thing. So she cried again when she had to leave. So I told her we can take it to Michigan, and she tells me that now every day.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. So, that's kind of the big change in our life. But otherwise, you know, it was Thanksgiving, so had family in town, played a lot. Not as many games as I thought, because the whole family didn't come, but. It's good to have them in town, you know, help with the kids. But
yeah.
How about you? How was the holiday for you?
Oh boy. Well, I feel like I've got a huge letdown after that emotional story of Ava. So boy, mine's just going to be nothing. The holiday was nice. We went to see my folks in Richmond, and as we told them, you know, this is probably the last Thanksgiving in a while that we'll be going to their house. They'll have to come to our house next year. And I did get a chance to go play golf with my dad. I personally hadn't played golf in 6 months. My dad hadn't played in over a year and a half because of COVID. He just, usually the guys that he plays with is his same age, and he doesn't want to get out there and get sick and vice versa and all that stuff.
Right,
so
right.
He just chose not to play. So him and I went out and played, and that was the best 9 holes I've played in a long time.
That's good.
Yeah.
At least 6 months for sure.
long time. That was some of the best golf I've played since graduate school.
Wow.
That's, no practice. I literally just took the clubs out of the car. We walked over to the tee box, teed off, and had a good time.
It's just like riding a bike, huh?
Yeah. It's almost as if the less you practice, the better off you are. So in your case, that probably means you're pretty good at games since you haven't been playing things lately.
Yeah,
but I know you've played some. So what have you been playing?
Yeah, specifically should mean I'm great at reading rules then.
Yeah.
it does require some practice.
Hey, though, right? Took my joke from me.
Zing. I'm good at making fun of myself. So our first game that I'm going to talk about, our first game, the Royal Hour, because I'm apparently royalty now, is Luxor, which I've mentioned in passing, I think, on lists before. It's designed by Rudiger Dorn and published by Queen Games. And I was actually thinking when I was playing it that this should have been on my list for Sari instead of Flamme Rouge. This, I think this fits even better. So this is like an Egyptian tomb hunter themed game. And you're all adventurers or archaeologists going into the same tomb. And you're racing to get to the center and to collect treasures throughout the tomb. We have all four expansions that came in the first set. I think there's only one set right now. But depending on how many of them you play with, it changes. You have starting powers. There's more variety in the treasures, different things like that. The mechanism that makes this unique is you have a card of five hands, a hand of five cards, rather, and card of five hands.
Crazy.
Hand management, whole new level. You have a hand of five cards, and you always have to play from the outside, so either the leftmost or rightmost card. And then when you draw a card, it goes into the center. And so that's kind of the hand management trick that you're managing. You always know what cards you have access to, and you're trying to build it to make the combo work correctly. And you all are working from the same central deck. So there is some luck to that, because there are definitely cards that are more or less powerful. But it's a 30 to 45 minute game. I think it was probably 60 minutes for us with four players and a teach. So two of those players were my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, who they play, like he plays D&D, so they, and she plays some lighter games, the Sagrada Azul, those types of games. And so they have some experience, but they're not hardcore gamers. So a rules teach is a little more involved compared to like if you're teaching us or something like that.
Fairly
light. I like playing with the expansions a little bit more, just because I like having the starting power. And
of course,
yeah, not surprising.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's a solid game that I definitely like. On the high end for Queen for me.
Interesting. Yeah, the box itself seems bigger than it needs to be.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it has one of those like giant cardboard inserts in it.
Yeah.
That I still have in there with both expansions in there. So, yeah, it definitely does not need to be that big. I don't know. I like the... It's kind of my Egyptian theme game that I like. So, I mean, that and Valley of Kings.
I was going to say, that's your MO is Egyptian stuff. I'm the dino guy,
yeah,
and you're Egyptian, man.
Yeah, but I only have those two.
Yeah. Well... But it's also in relation to your collection.
Yeah.
My collection is bigger.
Yeah. And those are true Egyptian, right? Like not Egyptian mythology. So I like the true Egypt a little bit more than say something like, why am I drawing a blank? Is it Ankh? Is the new one that just came out?
Yep.
And
another one would be
Kemet.
Kemet, yep. Kemet, yeah. Blood and Sand, that one just came out. And then even Tekenyu. And you just got to get into the solo realm of things for Tekenyu.
You don't have to.
No. It's easier to get it to the table.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so that's my first one in a lot of depth. How about you?
What's your... So my theme, I was going to do it based on games I played with my parents, included just one that I've highlighted before. That one was a lot of fun, and it had some questionable moments of my father's spelling that cannot be repeated on a podcast, because he sounded things out phonetically or spelled things out phonetically, and there was some words that we can't repeat. So needless to say, I'm going to go a different route, and instead the theme's going to be Luke Laurie design games not named Dwellings of Eldervale.
Okay.
And first on the list, I know, very specific theme.
Very
imagine
specific
that.
Theme today.
Well, we've got three that fits that category that I'm going to discuss, and the first one's going to be Cryo. Designed by Luke Laurie, and co-designed with Tom Jolly and published by Z-Man Games. So your spaceship has crashed on this frozen planet in this engine-building worker placement game. Place drones on the board to scavenge resources, save escape pods, collect cards, upgrade your player board, and finally send excavators into the caverns to protect your crew from the upcoming overnight freeze. This game has the typical worker placement mechanism with building a tableau, like from Dwellings of Eldervale, where you activate your tableau when you withdraw your drone slash workers from the board. This is a game that was fun overall. I always felt like I needed one more turn to maximize getting my crew into those caverns, because the resources were extremely tight and you needed resources for every single little action. And now it does remind me a lot of Dwellings, but unfortunately, Dwellings of Elderville is definitely the better game when it comes to the worker placement slash area control blending. It's just perfect. This is a neat game. It was quicker to play than I was expecting, but it still pales in comparison to some of Luke Laurie's other designs we'll get to.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, just because you mentioned that it has some elements similar to Dwellings of Eldervale. Yeah, Dwellings of Eldervale. Is it similar enough that basically Dwellings makes it that this is irrelevant to you? Or are they different niches?
They're different niches. Yeah. That area control of Dwellings, I feel like I like that better than this. It's just Dwellings had three or four different big mechanisms they had going on, just like this new games with Dune Imperium, Lost Ruins of Arnak has deck building and worker placement, and they're more or less equal.
Yeah.
Again, more or less. And Dwellings of Eldervale, it has like three mechanisms that are all equal to one another. This one tried to do that, but in a little bit lesser of a scale, a little more chewable, like digestible gameplay. I don't know how to try to use a food analogy here, but it's fine. It's just, I think for me, I'd rather have the bigger bite.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's your preference typically, is that you like to think deeper and when you're playing games. All right, so my second game, sticking with the lighter fare, is a game, I don't remember if I mentioned it before on this podcast, called Bullet Heart. Bullet Heart Emoji, maybe. I'm not sure if it's...
I think you have to have the emoji.
Yeah. It's designed by Joshua Van Lanningham and published by Level 99 Games. So this is kind of a anime-themed game that is mostly just the art on it. It's not really... The theme's pretty loose. This is mostly an abstract puzzle game where you are each some sort of heroine or heroine. No, I think it's heroine because the other way sounds too much like a drug. and so you have different special powers, and you can play this either competitive or co-op. If you're playing competitive, you're shooting bullets at each other, I guess, and trying to dodge them using your special powers, which is, in the game mechanism, lining up bullets, which have five different colors, which correlate to rows. So like row one is always pink, and row two is green, row three is yellow, and so on. I don't know that those are accurate. I'm just saying. So you line them up however your special power says, and then you can clear them out. When you clear them out, they go into the queue for the person that's clockwise from you. And you're just passing them. And basically, when somebody gets hit four times, which is the bullet going all the way down, and they're unable to dodge it, they are out of the game. And so then they no longer get bullets passed to them. We actually only played it co-op. So, and I've also played it solo. So, I played it solo arcade mode, so there's no boss. Mm-hmm. It's basically just keep going until you can't beat the level anymore, which was actually kind of fun because this has a real-time component to it. So the timer is 3 minutes, and you just keep going, going, going. And I think I got to like 17 bullets or something, and you start with four. And so when you start with four, it's really boring at the beginning. But when you're at like 17, it's really fun because you're like, oh, da, 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 moving stuff around as fast as you can. You at some point, you physically can't beat it. It's impossible because you just don't draw enough cards to do it. But yeah, anyways, I think for those that like real-time abstract puzzle, which is not a very common mechanism, it's something worth checking out. And if you don't like the real-time component, I would say it's not a huge deal because when we were just playing nice and slow and not even considering the time, it took 4 minutes for the longest person. So,
nice.
You know, just that just puts a little bit of pressure on you, not a ton of pressure. And when you're playing co-op, it was fine. So we had to beat a boss. So instead of our bullets being passed to each other, they got passed to a boss, basically. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Do you have the upgraded components that came with the Kickstarter?
I do not. And I didn't realize that that was when I bought it, because I watched the Dice Tower review and Tom Vassell said how awesome those bullets were. And so I was like, oh, yeah. Well, I mean, with the component quality as it was, and I got it for like $20-some or something, I was like, psh, that's a steal. It was not. I got
surprise.
I got cardboard chits. So the components aren't great in my end, but that's still okay. The game is still good. It's just not as satisfying to touch.
Yeah, that's what matters. And I could almost see like the Board Game Geek store creating those components or doing like a knockoff or something of them.
Yeah.
Somebody will.
I don't know if the game is going to be popular enough to do that or not. We'll see. Like, is it going to get on the level of like a Seasons or, you know, because a lot of people who have this game, I think probably did have the upgraded components when they got it. So they're not going to, they're automatically out. And so really the only, it's only the schmucks like me who thought they were getting the upgraded components, you know?
Oh, the schmucks.
Remember the schmucks.
Moving on, following along my theme of Luke Laurie Design Games not named Dwellings of Eldervale, next up is Choo Choo Whistle Mountain.
Oh, man. Dang you.
So Luke Laurie and Scott Caputo. Caputo.
Yes.
Yep. And published by Bezier Games.
Bezier.
So I'm going to start off. I don't speak French.
It's French.
Yeah, I don't speak French. I can wave a white flag. That's the French I know. So I'm going to start off by saying
French listeners.
To our French listeners.
We don't have any yet.
Jacques Le Bleu. All right. I'm going to start off by saying that this theme is terrible, but I'm still going to explain the game based on the theme. So in the Rocky Mountains, you are trying to build scaffolding along this bridge. You'll do so by collecting resources via airships, all while creating machines on the scaffolding to then save workers from the ever-rising river below. Basically, like many resource management games, with a unique spin that your airships can be placed near scaffolding, on machines, or around the board. So I personally love the ability to purchase upgrades, which essentially act as a tableau. Some of the examples would be like a water resources wild or build 2 scaffolding pieces and you get 3 points, things like that. Mm-hmm. And once your 3 airships are placed, you must take a forge action, aka return your ships and proceed to build scaffolding and machines, save your crew, and play cards. And if you play this forge action correctly, you can actually achieve a ton of points. Because if somebody takes it and you realize you're like 50 points behind them, you take a forwards action, boop, you're right there with them again. Mm-hmm. Now, for the solo mode, I will say it was extremely hard. And there's a video produced by Bezier Games where the dude roasted the AI, absolutely destroyed him. Mm-hmm. That guy played an immaculate game because the solo AI is tough. I've played him twice. I lost handily the first game and I got lucky the second game. Now, everything sounds pretty positive with this, believe it or not. But what hurts this game is the setup time. It was just a little bit too long for my liking, even though I did have an insert for this game. So maybe my opinion with this game will change with multiple plays, especially with a multiplayer game under my belt, because I know you want to play it.
Yeah.
But I like it. It's just, it's not the one Luke Laurie game that I would go to, not named Dwellings of Eldervale.
So apparently the next one must be the best one.
We'll see.
Man. Yeah, I definitely want to try this one. I was turned off originally because Whistle Stop doesn't look great, but they're apparently completely unrelated. So
it's terrible name.
Yeah.
Terrible theme. Great game.
The mechanism's good. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I actually do not have a third game this week. We played Role Player quite a bit. So, I mean, quite a bit for us, probably not for you. Probably roughly the same as you.
Probably.
Yeah. Sadly, I was hoping that actually this week was going to be a Thunderworks Games was going to be my theme, and I was going to talk about all of those. But as I mentioned to you, when I offered cartographers, I was shot down because they have access to that in Michigan. So why would they play that with me in Virginia? It's the most ridiculous thing ever.
Ludicrous.
So yeah, I did not play cartographers despite having the new expansion.
Well, we'll save that for another one.
Yeah.
I've already told you my thoughts on it, I'll save it for our listeners for another episode. Well, do you want to mention the name of my last game? You saw pictures for it. You remember?
No.
Well, I'll just go ahead and say it. So my last game of a Luke Lorre design game not named Dwellings of Eldervale is the Manhattan Project Energy Empire.
Durr.
Yep. So this was another game that Luke Lorre co-published or co-designed with Tom Jolly. And this one is actually published by Minion Games. Yeah. So it's a worker placement tableau building game. You will send your workers out on this board, but the unique part is that if another player is already on a space you want to use, you can actually still go there, but you have to be quote-unquote taller, aka you spend this energy. And how do you get that energy? Well, when you take a generate action to pull workers off the board, you can actually roll these cool energy die, and they're going to give you the ability to produce energy.
Mm-hmm.
However, it does come at a cost, as some of that energy can produce pollution, which has to go into your environment. The utilization of energy is a fun and truly unique mechanism. I love the event cards because after a certain number of pollution tiles have been placed, an event is triggered. Early in the game, those events are pretty genteel. They're not terribly difficult. They're usually giving you a little bit of a boost in some situations. And then later in the game, that script flips. Those event cards are nasty, super difficult, and it could truly ruin your round as you were trying to decide how to put all your workers out. So I have to say it's a perfect way to build your engine early with those nicer early event cards and then hope you've built it correctly by the time things get tough later on. This is the best game of the three games I mentioned tonight. I absolutely love it. And yes, Andrew, it is the oldest.
Yeah, but only 2016, as it turns out.
But still, Cryo was 2020, Whistle Mountain was 2020.
Yeah, yeah. See, old's not always bad.
This is outstanding.
Yeah.
I love this game. I will always play it. I know the guys at the Dice Tower absolutely love it. I think this is one of Z Garcia's favorite worker placement game. This is an incredible game. You got to play it.
Are the event cards that you were talking about, are they like flipped ahead of time and you know throughout the course of the round, or it's at the end of the round it's flipped and just deal with it?
It's how it normally works is it's flipped at the end of the round, just deal with it.
Okay.
However, there is an action you can take, send a worker to it, and you can look at the event card to see what's coming and plan accordingly. And you can also get I think it's an energy token or something like that.
Gotcha.
You can get something else on that worker placement spot. So it's kind of cool. That one acts like a lot of worker placements of trying to be the first player or whatever.
Yeah.
This one is just take a quick peek at the event card. I think it's cool.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, that's a classic one that I have not played, obviously, since I'm asking that question. But yeah, I think Brian owns that too. So between the two of you, someday, that list of need/want to play always grows and never shrinking.
Yeah. Well, this one's great, and it comes with a lot of baggies.
Oh, man. And you know how that goes.
Well, before we get into our review game, I want to mention something that I've been mistaken in this podcast.
Okay.
So I just recently learned that the artist that I love, Miko, it's not how you pronounce his name.
Oh, really?
It's Misho.
Oh.
So I have to apologize to him for mispronouncing his name so much.
Oh, all right. Well, lesson learned. Note taken. So what do you say we thunder on to our review game? You thought I was going to say roll. No, we say that all the time.
Well, I see that's been in the works for a while.
Oh. Nice. Today on Meeple Night, we review Roleplayer, Fiends and Familiars, designed by Keith Mateka and published by Thunderworks Games. In Roleplayer, players compete to create the greatest fantasy adventurer who has ever lived by building up their character's attributes, outfitting them with weapons and armor, training skills, and discovering personal traits along the way. With the addition of monsters and minions and Fiends and Familiars, heroes must prepare for a final showdown against an abomination terrorizing the countryside by battling its minions to discover its lair, how it attacks, and what obstacles the monster has prepared. On top of it all, pesky fiends lie in wait to hinder your development. Fortunately, the king has ordered mystical creatures in the realm to act as familiars to guardians of the realm, and they will aid you on your path. But will it be enough for the journey ahead? Only one player can be crowned the king's champion. Is Roleplayer Fiends and Familiars a monster terrorizing the board game hobby? Or is it a mythical game you should take on to be your familiar?
So for this rules teach, everyone will start the game with a character sheet, as well as a class, backstory, and alignment cards. And a familiar, since we're discussing this expansion tonight. In this game, you will draft dice to place on your character sheet. You will want to place this die based on the goals from your backstory and class. For instance, maybe your class wants strength to be at least 14 pips, and you have 3 die to try and meet that goal. Luckily, when you place a die in a row, that activates an attribute action, such as flip a die to an alternate side if you place into the strength row. Similarly, backstory will want a specific color die in, say, the second column of the charisma row. By achieving these goals, you'll maximize your stars at the end of the game. You can also place a die in the familiar row, which also has its own power goal and desired color placement. Oh, and its own unique attribute action. Once you've placed your die, you can purchase a card which includes traits, skills, scrolls, and armor, each of which will give you additional stars at the end of the game based on set collection, for instance, or maybe help you fight monsters in the Monsters and Minions expansion, where you can actually forego this market phase and instead fight off those little minions to achieve experience and a chance to learn the weakness of the final monster, which you'll end up fighting as you complete your character development. Now, scores can vary, but I'd say anything greater than 30 points, which was definitely more than I scored last night.
Yeah. So in every play I played, I mentioned this last night, I think it was 4 or 5 plays over the last week, I scored within the same 2 point, like 36 to 38, I think it was, every time. It's exactly where I was, so. I'm a very consistent player.
Consistently good. I'm the, yeah. I either hit all of my good, like maximize everything, or I minimize everything.
Yeah. Anyway, so after the rules teach, we'll start with our first impressions and aesthetics. And actually for this, I wanted to clarify. Is this our first impressions on Fiends and Familiars or our first impressions on the series as a whole?
I'm doing the series as a whole.
Okay. On the series as a whole then. I remember when I first got this box. This is one of those really nice like Kickstarter level boxes, you know, that's really thick cardboard. Yep. And kind of has some, the art is interesting for me because I think it's going to be like Tiny Towns, that some of the characters look really cool. And specifically, I think it's the halfling that's on the cover or whatever he is, just looks really weird.
Yeah, true.
And like he doesn't match the rest of the style. But otherwise, the art in this game is really cool. The production, I thought in the first one, was good. Obviously, it's just cardboard for money and stuff. But this was 2016 is when it came out. So before, you know, Kickstarter metal coins was the norm. It happened, but was not the norm, right? But then getting to, by the time Fiends and Familiars came out, there's a lot of little things now that, like, the production doesn't match up.
Yeah.
Which we talked about last night. If you look at the backs of the cards, Monsters and Minions has a different color scheme on the back than the base game, and different than Fiends and Familiars, which is also different from the promos. And the promos are also cut to a different size. Yeah. So, I mean, I know that's nitpicky. And honestly, when I'm looking at the back of the deck, it's not so different that I'm like, oh, that's obviously from this.
Yeah.
But it is annoying. But yeah, otherwise, I really like the art that's on the cards. And it's kind of the art that goes with the series. And I think that's why I like it. It's just kind of an established theme that they use throughout it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a mismatch of art or anything.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take a different approach. I'm going to go back years ago to when you first introduced this game to me.
Yep.
Your comparison to me, you described it as a mix between Sagrada meeting D&D. Dungeons and Dragons. And that night we played the base game only, and I was severely underwhelmed. Based on the Meeple Knight scoring, I would have given that a 2. Or as we talked about last night on the fruit scale, this would have been a raspberry.
Hold on. We haven't defined it. The listeners don't understand the fruit scale yet.
I know.
You have to wait till we get there.
Oh, man. Well, spoiler alert, listeners, there might be a fruit scale coming up. Anyways, when the Kickstarter for Role Player Adventure came out, I followed along. I actually backed, canceled my pledge, and then jumped back in and got everything. I went all in. I decided, you know, this is something that enough people were talking positive things about this game. I figured I was the one that was missing something. And to be...
This was Fiends and Familiars or Monsters and Minions?
Sorry. All.
So, like, a year ago.
Yep.
Okay.
And I think I was missing something. And that it was those expansions. So that was the one thing that my first impression did not have those expansions. And we'll get into the reasons tonight why I think those are critical. So I just wanted to lead off with that caveat. Now, for me, talking about the actual components, which is what we do here in the first impressions, I love the player boards being recessed. But another thing with your card quality, it needed to be thicker. I like the linen finish.
Yeah.
But Veronica ruffle shuffled them for me, and one of them bent halfway.
Mm.
So I didn't care for that too much. And maybe this is a game that has to be sleeved, but I don't think so. I want a deck builder to be sleeved. I don't want to have to sleeve this because of poor production quality when everything else in the production was fantastic. And speaking of some fantastic things, I would highlight the smaller combat die. So this is literally a game of dice. But when you have those combat die that you need for the Fiends and Familiars and Monsters and Minions expansions, I love that they were a little bit smaller. Yeah. That was a nice little touch.
Translucent.
Yep.
So you obviously know that they're different.
Yep.
While we're talking about the dice, though, I will complain as a person who does care about dice. I don't consider myself a dice expert, but I'm there's something about these dice that just are underwhelming.
Hmm.
In the role player dice, they're like perfect square dice. There's no round beveled edge or whatever. And they just look, I don't know, the color scheme that they chose or something, they just look very plain. I do like that they're full size dice as compared to Sagrada, which is all mini dice.
Yep.
So, you know, you win it, you win some, you lose some. Or in this case, you just lose some on both sides. But
I'm going to argue against you on that point. I like the color scheme. I don't struggle to see these die. I don't look at a blue and purple and be like, I can't tell the difference.
Oh, no, that's not what I mean.
They don't have a pop. They just look bland.
Yes. Bland. Yes. Yeah. And maybe that was a colorblind decision and I don't know that.
If I am, again, trying to get into the head of Keith, the designer of this game, I could see stuff like that. The guy kind of thinks like that. So I could totally imagine that coming from him.
Yeah. So maybe that's what it is.
But we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. So rules. I would say the rule book is straightforward enough to quickly read through it, but it's not perfect. Now,
yeah,
we'll talk about an experience from last night in a few minutes. But so when you add mm-hmm. in all the expansions, it says take out a, this is one of the examples. So if you add the expansion, it says take out a certain number of cards from the market deck, but it doesn't
yep.
tell you take out a certain number, like a certain number of one level one cards or level two cards.
Yeah.
And I think that's a trick because what am I going to do? I ended up taking 20 of each because I thought that would be the smoothest way of doing it, but it actually hurt me because I didn't care for that.
Yeah.
There was enough of these rules that were forgotten or not included that,
yeah.
or they were just said once over three rule books, made it a little tough to get through. Now, there are plenty of rules videos yeah. out there that can cover a bunch of stuff. And for anybody in the solo community, the One-Stop Co-op Shop, fantastic job discussing this game. But the rule book has left some things to be desired.
Yeah, and one of those things for me specifically is some sort of quick reference. They kind of have it now in Fiends and Familiars with the, what is it called? The Adventure, Roll to Adventure or something card that comes out. That triggers when you switch from two dice to one dice.
Yep.
That card has a setup on the back that helps a little bit. It doesn't answer all the questions, but they just needed a back, or like a lot of the Uwe games or Stefan Feld games come with like a quick summary on the side. So if you've read the rules already, you just need that quick reminder blurb of how to set up. And this doesn't have that. And so because the reality is I play this game, you know, a couple times a year.
Yep.
And so I have to go back and almost reread the whole setup just to make sure I do it right. Because there's no, like, it's missing the bolding or whatever. Like you said yesterday, you circle the five yep. for the number of gold, which also is another thing in itself that it changed. The rule changed from game to game, which I understand for balancing. I get it, but it's now a third thing I need to remember
yeah.
or like sort through if I make sure I have the right rule book and then have the right setup. I don't know. Just another little annoyance.
True. Well, what about theme and setting? I feel like you'd be more of an expert at discussing that than I would.
Yeah, I mean, so I've played D&D. And read a couple of the Forgotten Realms books. Although this is transitioned from at the beginning, it felt to me like it was just generic. Now with Role Player Adventure and Cartographers and Lockup, this is its own setting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think this is a neat theme. I think the main, or so a neat setting, right? But it doesn't fully draw me in because the alignment doesn't feel like anything.
Yeah.
The backstory doesn't feel like anything. Like, it's fun to, I pick those things out thematically to like create my character. But after that, it doesn't really, I mean, the attributes make sense with what you are and the special power does.
Yeah.
But the backstory and the alignment don't, I mean, the alignment does make sense, but like mechanically, there's nothing about moving that around that
True.
Makes it matter. It's not like what I'm doing makes me more chaotic or has any game setting that makes me more good or evil. And then I think what's missing for me in this to make it go from setting to theme is that the dice colors don't mean anything. And I have no idea how you could do that. No idea.
Sure.
But I mean, they kind of did that. The dice colors affect the monster
mm-hmm.
In some of the ALO. What is that? Attack location and obstacles or something.
Yep.
Attack layer and obstacles for the monster. So that's where the colors start to matter now. But as far as like for your player, which would be your backstory, I don't feel like they really makes sense for anything. Like, why do I have to have a black here or a green in the first slot and a blue in the second slot? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. So Yeah, it's there. The art does it. And I think the monsters and minions and fiends and familiars help make it more thematic. But I don't think it fully crosses for me. It doesn't cross the bridge.
Okay. Well, all right. So I'll start with the art. I think this is some of the best art we have in our board game hobby.
Mm-hmm.
I'm naturally drawn to it, and it's not the Misho art. So notice what I did there. Naturally drawn to it. I know that's a bad joke. All right.
So, I actually don't know. I don't know what you did. Even what you're
trying. Art. Like, I was commending the art. I'm naturally drawn to it.
Yeah. Got it. Oof, well, sorry.
Listener base, I've never played D&D. I've multiple friends have tried to get me to go that route, and I have been hesitant to do so. But this is what I imagine the core experience of D&D is, because it's all about building your character. And with the basic role player game, you're building a character, but you're not doing anything with it. And that's where D&D takes it to the next level. And that's where the expansions, where you can take that character you just built, your character, and then go fight those monsters and minions along the way. So I think that theme of fighting, actually using your character and not just, hey, let's just throw... It's sort of like when you start a video game and you outfit your character and then that's it. You're done.
Yeah.
So the theme and setting in this regard, I'm taking it from the perspective of you got to have those expansions, which we're going to talk about here in a second as well. So moving into gameplay, specifically the mechanisms, now you can throw anything you want in there, but I've got drafting, set collection, and push your luck, specifically when you're attacking those minions and monsters.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Because that actually wasn't a category on Board Game Geek. I decided to add that. Now, for me, I love the attribute that you could move things around or that you could adjust the pips as needed. So that way it gives you a little flexibility, but boy, is that tough. And the attribute skill that I hate the most is reroll.
The intelligence, yep, yeah.
I don't use it that much. I usually start building my character from the start of the game. I put a bunch of dice in that row if I can.
Yeah.
And the one thing I will say, and I want to get your opinion on this is not something I mentioned last night, was that I wish more cards would give you the ability to re-trigger / activate more of those attribute skills.
Yeah, yes, I agree. I think that is the biggest benefit to me of the Monsters and Minions expansion. Adding experience, and then you can use 5 experience to redo an attribute action. That and the boost dice that it adds single-handedly improves the game.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, just because I don't... I mean, it's kind of... I'm not segueing, but like while we're in mechanism, because you mentioned that I talked or said that it's Sagrada with D&D is... When I compare this as a dice drafter, dice drafting puzzle, like Sagrada knocks this out of the park, right? Like to me, because I think this takes a lot longer.
Yes.
A lot longer.
Agreed.
And so, I mean, this was a 2-hour game, not with us yesterday. Might have been like 60 to 90 minutes yesterday. But generally, this is going to be a 90-minute game minimum, especially with the expansions. And so, as opposed to Sagrada, a slow game is 45 minutes. That, to me, just that aspect of the mechanism, Sagrada is better. But once you add in the expansions, I think I prefer the role player expansions over the Sagrada expansions.
Definitely.
I think that these expansions do more for the game because, like we said, the experience allowing you to trigger more attributes, the familiars giving you a special power, the fiends. I actually really liked that they changed the thought process because when you play Monsters and Minions, or at least when I played it, I found everybody kind of goes for the lower numbers at 3 or 4. Doesn't matter. I'm fighting a monster. It's not really that relevant what order I go in. Mm-hmm. I want the high dice and I want to fight a monster. And I thought that aspect of Monsters and Minions was a little bit broken. This Fiends and Familiars, I thought, changed a couple things. I thought it made the market a little bit more powerful and the minions a little bit harder to beat.
Yeah.
Which made a big swing, because when we played the three of us last night, which was the only time I actually played all three combined, there was a lot more market buying than I expected based on monsters and minions.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think Fiends and Familiars fixed that imbalance. And I lost my train of thought of where I was going. So
yeah. So for the listeners, the fiends are added when you draft
fiends.
They're placed on, if it's a two-player game, it's 1 through 3. If it's initiative cards. Last night with a three-player game, there was 4 initiative cards. So it's player count plus 1. Anyways, if you take a higher pipped die, so a stronger, quote-unquote stronger die, then what you're going to get is a fiend. So it's kind of counteracting that a little bit. So not only are you going to be going later in initiative order, but you're also going to get a fiend potentially that you're going to have to combat. And for someone like Nicole, who had those great charisma tokens that could easily knock off or counteract or cancel, whatever, banish, that's the word, banish a fiend.
Banish him.
That made it so she kept grabbing all those high-powered die, and she just didn't care about initiative order. She was okay going last, so she would get a great die and easily banish the fiend. And that, we'll get into it. So that kind of goes about the flow of the game. And you'd already mentioned it a little bit. This is a brain burner.
For sure.
Sagrada, you know, you can sit there and analyze a few things, especially if you play some of the more difficult cards. This game, I've had multiple times, I think I've developed a headache while playing it. Because it, you know, if you know, the like the cog wheels are turning in your head, the steam's coming out the ears. And I'm not saying that is a bad thing for once. There's a lot of meat to this. And especially there can be, there was a few moments where you were sitting there analyzing all your things. So you had a little bit of analysis paralysis, trying to min-max your way through all your class requirements.
Right.
But the thing I've learned, and this is why I lose probably, but you won't achieve all of your class attributes. You just can't. And you accept it. And you get the ones that are worth the highest stars instead. And you move on. Yeah. Because, at least for me, I think I've only achieved all of my class requirements once. And that was a huge victory that I won't say who I was playing against.
So it is a brain burner, and you are right that it's not inherently negative. There are times, though, I don't know how you guys weren't annoyed with me last night, because there were 2 or 3 times that I was, because I had a weapon, I don't remember what it was, elven longbow or something, that let me do the attribute action when I completed a row. Yep. I got to do the attribute action twice. And so all of a sudden, it was like, well, if I get to do it twice, I got to really think about how, like, because I could do dexterity, so I could move 4 dice, and that was huge, especially for the monster we happen to be fighting. But, yeah, so I think the flow can suffer sometimes. So if you are one who gets annoyed with other people having AP, I think that the flow can be the problem. And I think that's probably why I said I prefer Sagrada for a dice drafting puzzle.
Yeah.
Because and monsters and minions and fiends and familiars does shift that away, right? This has become not just a dice drafting spatial puzzle anymore. There's a lot of points to be had doing the other things.
Yeah. And that, you also alluded to it with the length of the game. I think our game last night was about 60 minutes. I actually think we spent more time talking than playing game.
We talked so much at the end. I don't know. Yeah. I think 9:21 is when we finished. I don't know when we started.
So maybe a little over an hour.
But yeah.
So be it.
Yeah.
Solo games are obviously a lot quicker. The one thing I will highlight is that the expansions, even though they add more content, I don't think they necessarily increase the game length that much.
Hmm. They increase the setup.
Well, that's true when you have baggies.
Yeah. Even if you don't have baggies, you have a whole extra deck to shuffle. Get out of here. Whole extra deck. And then you got to pick out your monster.
You gotta make sure your class cards don't match the monster color. Yeah. Anyways, I think that's a positive, though, talking about these expansions.
Yeah.
Anything else you've got for length of game?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. I think you are slowly shifting me as we talk about this, that my problem has been that I've always compared this to Sagrada. And I'm realizing that that is not fair.
Yeah.
Because it always loses in my mind. For like visual appeal, I prefer Sagrada. Length of time. You know, I'd rather play a 45-minute game than a 90-minute game, theme. Generally. Yeah, church stained glass. Duh.
Okay. But accessibility, because Sagrada can be available at Target. Role player is not.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
But do you think role player is fun?
Ooh, do I get to use the Josh term this time?
Yes?
So the couple times I played, I think this is just a case of who you're playing with. I had fun last night. I had fun playing it.
Agreed.
But one of the times we were playing, I think it was the two-player game I played, was not that fun.
Wait, was that the one we played together?
Oh, well, we did play together two-player, yeah. But that's not specifically
okay. I was
going to
say, you're going to say it was because you just played with me.
No. That we played Monsters and Minions. That was like, what, 6 or 7 months ago?
Yeah.
Maybe a year ago now.
Yep.
We played, I think it might have been just base role player is this week with my brother-in-law. And I think just maybe base game, two-player, role player is not enough there, mm-hmm. as you mentioned. But the Fiends and Familiars does add, I really like having to deal with the Fiends. I really like that addition.
Yeah.
The split dice, just because we haven't talked about it yet. Split dice was underwhelming, I guess. It was not as big of an addition as I thought it was
going to
be.
Compared to the boost die, which is like, what? I think base level is a 4 and max level is an 8.
I think it's 3 to 8.
3 to 8, okay.
Right, because it goes 1 to 6 to 3 to 8.
Okay.
But yeah, the... Right, like the boost die makes a huge difference because you have on almost every class card something you need an 18 in, which means you need 3 6s.
Yep.
Mostly. Few exceptions, but the boost die makes it helps make that realistic.
But also hurts trying to get your backstory because a boost die is clear, thus not a color.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just going to keep fighting against you.
No, I know. I just don't think the colors, like I said earlier, for the theme, they're not that relevant. And unless it's the monster color or your class color,
yeah,
it's not super relevant, which means half the colors don't matter.
Okay.
Potentially. So.
All right. So for me, I actually didn't say fun ? Because I wrote base game alone sucks. It is awful. I hate it. Like, it would have been potentially a paleo. But I have to say, once you throw in that Monsters and Minions, that's my favorite expansion. I'll just say it. I think it's critical because in order to attack, it changes this game so much. Now, I know you seem like you're a bigger fan of the Fiends and Familiars. I think it's fine. I like it. I'll gladly play with everything in it. But I think the thing that makes this game fun, if I had to choose Monsters and Minions or Fiends and Familiars, it was Monsters and Minions, hands down.
Mm.
But I will say, going back to your Familiars, Fiends and Familiars, I love the fact that early in the game you could draft 2 die because it gave you flexibility. It allows you to potentially fulfill your backstory card color like dice location color requirement. Really? But it also challenged you because when you place both die, you can only activate 1 attribute action. So you have to decide, okay, I'm essentially throwing away an action if I put this here in the strength, which would allow me to flip it. Because instead, I want to place it here in the intelligence because I want to get that color there. So I love that decision making.
and it speeds up the game. And even when it's annoying to everyone.
Yeah.
So it's not like you are disadvantaged as an individual.
Yep. All right. So that brings us into the fun category I usually mention, solo. And I personally think that this has an extremely strong solo experience. If we are staying on this Sagrada comparison, I will 100% play this over Sagrada solo.
Yeah, I can see that.
Now, I could potentially get Veronica to play this, as she seemed at least somewhat interested when I went over the rules with her. But even if she doesn't, this solo game is so strong and it plays in about 30 minutes. I love it. I would strongly give the recommendation for this game for solo. If you only play solo, or that's predominantly what you play, like what I've been doing lately, fantastic solo experience.
Nice. I'm actually surprised, because I thought when I looked at it, it looked like it was a beat your own score or like high, get a high score.
It is. But there's just something about it with this.
That puzzle is just so
puzzle,
intense.
Yeah. And the variety built into this game with all the different components and everything. Each experience I've had with it has been unique, and I've really enjoyed that solo.
Awesome.
So that alludes into replayability.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think this this is an up and a down for it. There is so much if you have all three expansions. So much. Even if you have just one of the expansions. I didn't count. There's got to be at least 50 backstories, though. It seems like so many.
Yeah, I think it does seem like a lot.
And I don't really get why, because they don't really do anything for. I mean, they do something, but they're not like the names of the backstories don't mean that much. Anyways,
yeah.
The classes, there's six of each
color of each color.
A lot of each color. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. And there's six colors, right? So 36. Yep. There's probably another 50 or 60 alignment cards. In a three-player game, you discard 40 cards out of the market deck if you have everything mm-hmm. combined, which is almost half of, I think 60-something was. So we discarded 40, 22. So 62 cards is half the deck. So a third of the deck gets discarded. Monsters. There are now 12 monsters in the game. You play with one per thing. Minions is probably about the same. You discard a third of the minions.
Yeah.
That's not based on player size either. And you don't use half of them anyways.
Yep.
Now, when it was just monsters and minions, that was not the case.
True.
You do use almost all of them. So yeah, there's a ton of variability, and basically no game has felt exactly the same. Though I do tend to lean towards the going for the armor strategy, which leads to my main complaint about the variability, is that the armor and set collection has been significantly weakened now, because you don't, I don't know. There should be some sort of mechanism or something where whatever class colors are in, those armor sets are in, and you pull everything else out or something. Yeah. I don't know. Just so that there's a chance that you can get at least one or two of them. I don't know. So that annoys me a little bit. But also, those are some of the best bang for your buck points anyways, just if you get one of them.
Yeah.
So, there was one other thing about variability I wanted to talk about, but you can go. I'll think if I think of it.
Well, I was just going to say, this is the type of game, at least for me. I know you as a family group don't do this, but when we're done playing it, I could see us resetting immediately and playing again at two players. Maybe not more than that, because I think it's fantastic for that. For what you just said, there is so much replayability. There's so much variety in every single card. I literally could shuffle those the minions back up, discard the seven I was supposed to, and I've got an entirely different deck. Or, you know, I add in those seven minions and discard the other seven I just played. Whatever it is, I think it's fantastic for that. You're never going to get the same gameplay time and time again. Now, at the same time, I'm going to agree with you with the negative things with the armor. Yes, it waters down that armor. It also has the ability to create mins and the maxes. So you could potentially, everything clicks. That you get the armor that matches your class, you can get all this different stuff, and the replayability, it's through the roof because you're elated, you're happy, you're really great about it.
Yeah.
There's other times where nothing fell right. The dice didn't fall right. The cards didn't come out because there was so many different variety of those cards. The replayability does hurt it. You might min and you'll be like, you know what? I'm done. I don't want to play this again. So I think there was a lot of pros and cons of the same thing of having too much.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention, which I don't know that it really belongs in replayability, but I don't know where else to put it. Was we talked about last night, the dice bag being some way of, I don't know, neutralizing the color amount or something so that you don't have more than half the bag left over at the end of a game. But I don't know how you do that with split dice, but just another little annoyance. But that just comes from my comparison with Sagrada again, which is the exact same number of every die is put in that bag.
So let's do another comparison with Sagrada. The rules, I think, are simple enough. I think the last time you and I played was like 6 months ago or plus. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I came back to this and I really didn't need a huge rules teach to get back into the swing of things. And I think that's a positive for the replayability aspect. The rules aren't that difficult. While they are missing some components that we mentioned earlier, I think that's a huge plus. To try to get this back to the table. If I see the game, be like, hey, that's easy to remember. Quick.
Right,
read the rules, move on.
Yeah, and the symbols are all intuitive, at least to gamers. I don't know about to non-gamers.
Exactly. All right, well, let's move on to our overall thoughts. And how about we introduce our new scoring mechanism here at Meeple Night?
Our new scoring system on Meeple Night is a fruit-based categorical scale starting at a blueberry, working your way up to a watermelon, where a blueberry, formerly known as a one, is
That's fun. Just stick to the numerical. He heard that on the podcast. He wanted to try it. I told him to save it for like a fruit-based review game.
All right, we'll try it again for the next game. All right, one is not fun. I would ask, pass if asked to play. Two, game is okay, not likely to hit the table. Three is a good game worth playing in the right situation. Four is a great game, almost always willing to play and need to have access to it. And five is an amazing game, among my favorites, must own it. And I'm going to let you go first because I'm still kind of formulating where I'm going to lie.
Oh, boy. Well, all right. So I don't think I've held back my opinion of what I think of this game. Base game alone would have scored a two. And I actually wrote down a simple comparison here is that you make your character not do anything with it. It's like driving to the airport just to come back home, a.k.a. what American Airlines tried to do to us on our honeymoon. All right, going beyond that, talking about the expansions. Monsters and Minions is exactly what an expansion is supposed to do. And to me, I bet that they created this expansion from the beginning but didn't immediately publish it with the base game. But hey, I could be wrong. Regardless, I think it's a fantastic game. I think it's probably better solo than multiplayer, in my opinion. But it's also great if you're a D&D player or a normal gamer. Just kidding. But I still believe that Role Player is a strong enough game, despite all the limitations. But it's a little too swingy. And when it swings into the scoring realms, it's going to earn a score of a 3 for me. I really liked it at 4, but last night's game was too swingy, and I thought back, every time I've played this, it's a little bit too much. I'm not as consistent as you are at this, so it's going to have to fall at a 3 for me.
Gotcha. Yeah, so my trouble with scoring for this is I did like the base game originally, though Sagrada was my preference, so I'd probably put it at a 3 for base role player. I disagree with you on Monsters and Minions. I had fun and I liked the addition of the monster, but I felt that the monsters was the only route to go when you played that game. Like I thought that the market became underwhelming and not worth my time for the most part.
Okay.
And maybe I was playing wrong. I don't know. I'm not like, I've not played hundreds of times to know. That was just my thoughts on a few plays. Fiends and Familiars, based on the split dice and the familiars adding more to your stuff you could do, was something we wanted to try out. When we started this week, we tried just Fiends and Familiars. Not great. Would not recommend role player with just Fiends and Familiars. But then, if you have the whole kitchen sink, I think that's the best way. Yep. I think that's the best version of this game.
Yep.
And so, that's my struggle, is that on its own, each expansion was actually hurt the game for me. But then, for whatever reason, math, two negatives make a positive, and improved the game as an overall. It does say in the rule book, recommend playing with the monsters and minions. But yeah, I mean, I think because of those caveats that you basically have to make this game be fully loaded, and it now requires me to teach somebody that much extra stuff, I'm going to fall to a 3 with this as well. And it's also that variability thing. Not so much as the swingy scores for me as it is just the swingy experience in general.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think we've kind of highlighted, we might have been beating a dead horse a little bit here, but role player, a fantastic game, but you fall at a 6 from Meeple Knight.
And finally, we take the time to discuss what we would buy on a Target shopping spree this holiday season based on a few photos that Josh snapped.
Thanksgiving has now passed and we are in the holiday season. This discussion topic tonight is thanks to our non-existent sponsor, Target. Why Target? Well, Target and Barnes & Noble have a lot of hobby board games, and it's easier for a lot of people to purchase them than, say, going to a friendly local game store. Ignoring it, Amazon for a second here. So we figured we would cover 5 games that we would purchase as a gift based on what Target currently has for sale, based on those really crude photos that I sent Andrew. Anyways, in honor of Thanksgiving, we will utilize a game pie.
Woo.
Pie. Now, before we get into our thing, how many crossovers do you think we have?
1.
I'm going to vote 2.
You think 2? All right. Let's see.
So let's see what your first slice of pie is. Let's go with the pumpkin pie.
The pumpkin pie, which is the most obvious of choices for Thanksgiving. And so it will be the most obvious of choices for me from Target, which fills the strategy game, aka Euro Kenner Spiel type game. And that's Wingspan. So this, to me, it's just an obvious one that needs to be in any collection anyways. If you are making the step up from just, general Target board gamer to the next level, I think Wingspan needs to be in that collection. And if I didn't have Wingspan, I would certainly buy it because any time there's been a Wingspan expansion and I didn't have it, I've bought it. So, you know, same logic. So, and that, you know, I think it's the only one on my list that wasn't on a Black Friday sale, which is why it's an obvious choice that you have to have it, because it's so good they wouldn't even put it on sale.
All right. Well, this is a crossover for sure. My category for this is a game for anyone. Okay. Now, I know Jeff has played it with his family. I've played it with a few different people, and it's a game we've mentioned on the podcast before. It's received high marks. We're not going to highlight about why. It's all the great things, but just to mention a few things. It's great that in the game, it comes with those eggs, the wooden dice, the dice tower, different scoring methods for beginners as well as seasoned veterans, and it's easily expandable for your family if you like it a lot. The way I describe this as, aka additional birthday/Christmas gifts down the road, right? You can always get more gifts for a game that you love. And
you can always add some whipped cream. You can always put it in the microwave. You know, you can always do a little bit more.
If this is the pumpkin pie, it's definitely whipped cream.
You have to do the canned ready whip.
Ready whip, yeah.
So anyway, this is the highest ranked game on BoardGameGeek that Target sells, and it's the number one ranked family game. Now, the only downside, you mentioned it, is price.
Yeah.
It wasn't currently on sale for their Black Friday sale, but it probably will be, maybe, I don't know, between now and Christmas. This is a fantastic game, and a couple of little highlights I'll mention is it plays in 40 to 70 minutes. I think it's less, but to each their own, and ages 10 and up, just to throw that out there.
Yeah.
So this was a fantastic pie. What's give us another slice. How about apple?
All right. Yeah, that is what I was going to choose because it's also a pretty obvious choice, but it has a little spice, a little kick to it. So, you know, it's a twist on a normal mechanism, which would be trick taking. Uh-huh. And I also my co-op game. So another one I've talked about, which is The Crew. Uh-huh. Mission in Deep Space. I don't expect this to be a crossover. I expect Wingspan. I did expect. So The Crew is a cooperative mission based trick taking game. So I think it's 50 missions that you can do. Basically, we've gotten to the point, we haven't played all 50 missions, but we found the mission that we like, which is mission number 50. And we just play that one. Because it feels like a classic card game, basically.
Yeah.
So, but it's cooperative. So, yeah, I mean, it's numbered 1 through 10, 4 suits plus 4 super trump. If you like trick taking, it's worth a try. If you don't like trick taking, don't bother because this is not going to change your mind.
Yeah,
I don't think so. All right, that's my apple pie.
So that was an honorable mention.
Okay,
because I think it is a fantastic trick taking game. The only problem is, I love playing spades in school. I like trick taking games. Veronica is not of that ilk, so we don't play it that much as a result, and I could see that being an issue for other families too, or if you have somebody that's really good at trick taking games, those that aren't, it didn't quite meet that criteria for me. So instead, for a fun family game, I decided to go with Codenames Disney.
That was my honorable.
Vata Shavatal, and published by Czech Games Edition. So Codenames is a fun deduction-style game where you'll give a clue and have the rest of your team pick cards. Disney uses pictures from their cartoons and makes everything cooperative versus the traditional Codenames where you play in teams. So an example would be Villain for 3. So the team would pick Cruella, Gaston, and that braces girl from Finding Nemo, for instance. Anyways, this one retails for $20, plays in about 15 minutes, and claims to be for ages 8+. I could see it as being a fun family game to play with everybody after eating Christmas dinner or, say, Christmas Eve night. And if your family gives a single Christmas Eve gift, I think this one would be a good one.
Yeah, that is perfect. That is exactly my memories of this game. We had a couple years that's what we did. Not Codenames Disney, but Codenames.
For 3 with the braces girl from Finding Nemo.
Yeah. gotta have that.
You'll never forget that.
All right. So I'll stick in the same realm of family games, which is going to be my lemon meringue pie.
Ooh.
Because it's a little bit tart, you know? It can be a little aggressive on your palate, even though it's obviously for families. And so then mine's going to be Villainous, Disney Villainous specifically for me, because Marvel Villainous was also in the picture. And actually the base game Villainous was not, but you can put the expansions are, and all of them are standalone expansions. If you are into Disney, this is a great experience. I wouldn't get too, I don't know how to say it. I wouldn't get too wedded to winning sometimes. Because this can be a game that just the way the cards fall, it is literally impossible. There is nothing you can do unless somebody is playing really dumb. But if you are playing with 4 adults at the table, sometimes it's just out of your control. And so you got to kind of enjoy the experience as it's happening. And so that's why I put it in the family game. And then also, you know, the Disney theme. And so I love the Disney theme. And it doesn't bother me that much when I, you know, sit down for 90 minutes and you're all themed as villains. So being aggressive doesn't feel bad because that's what you're supposed to do. You're just playing your role. Know your role. See?
Wow.
Sorry.
Know your role.
The Rock.
Well then. All right, so if we're going to do lemon meringue as a tangy family style game, I've got one that definitely will not be a crossover. So this is a cross. This is a category that I'm calling family game who don't have children / after they go to bed. And that is Anchorman the Game, Improper Teleprompter, designed by Jason Lucholiglichi. Yeah, butchered that. And Barry McLaughlin. Published by Barry and Jason Games and Entertainment. Real original Jason and Barry. All right, so this is basically Mad Libs. You're Veronica Corningstone or Ron Burgundy, where you, the judge, will read these teleprompter messages that others have given you, and you pick the best one, apples to apples style. Mm-hmm. And, oh yeah, it comes with an exclusive Sex Panther 60-second timer. Yeah, boy. All right, so this falls into my category of stupid fun. Yeah. It looks neat. I think Shut Up and Sit Down did a review for this and actually was like, even though it looks stupid, it's fun. It retails for $25 and is for ages 17 and up. It looks neat and would be one of those, if somebody had it, I'd absolutely play it. Be a kind of a cool gift. Maybe even, this is what I was thinking of, a white elephant gift.
Hmm.
Or what's the night white elephant?
Yes, that's it.
Or Secret Santa, I guess.
Yeah, isn't that the same thing?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the other names for it, but that's my lemon meringue.
Oh, no, it's not the same, because White Elephant is where people get to choose based on the box.
You're right.
Secret Santa is you have a name. Yeah, that's right. We know Christmas. We know games, not holidays. Jeez, people. Go listen to a holiday podcast.
Please don't. All right, what about pecan pie? What would fall in that category?
Pecan pie.
Pecan.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to stretch the idea of pecan pie because pecan pie, it's all about the experience of eating it. It's not anybody's favorite.
What? Get out of here. you're nuts.
You're knucking futs. Anyways, so my game for pecan pie is going to be Betrayal at House on the Hill, which is an experience more than a game. I mean, it's definitely a game, but the mechanisms are not a huge draw to that game. Like, you roll dice and move around. It's all about the role-playing and experiencing the story of the house and seeing how it unfolds. And then somebody turns traitor, and that's when it's a fun game at that point. There's a lot of times where I think if you are super competitive, this could not be a good game because you might be like, oh, I'm going to win as the traitor and I'm going to do the perfect strategy. And it's like, it's not really that kind of game. It's more about sitting at the table and having fun together than it is about winning the game, even though there is definitely a winner and loser at the end of it. So I don't know. I have good memories of a lot of the experiences that happen because the game tells a story based on how the mansion unfolds. I wish I could say Betrayal Legacy, but I think that wasn't on there, and I also haven't finished it to know whether that's true. So we'll just say regular Betrayal.
Okay. Well, the only loser here is you for not liking pecan pie. Experience. All right. So my next one, I'm
not
hoping...
Not from the South, man. I'm not from the South.
Well, my next one I'm hoping will eventually be on your list so I can satisfy my two crossover goal. And this category falls under the category of intermediate range for hobbyists and non-hobbyists alike. It's Azul. We mentioned it before. Target has the original one. I think it's the best one to start with. And it's currently ranked as the best abstract on Board Game Geek. The tiles have a nice heft to them, so it has those fun components. They look like Starburst. The theme isn't really there, but who cares? Same time, it doesn't really need the theme because the rules are easy enough to explain that you don't need a theme. And to quote Veronica from the other day, it's easy to play yet hard to master. It's that perfect little niche right there. So this one retails for $40. I think it was currently on 20 for the Black Friday sale, but it plays in about 30 to 45 minutes and for 8+. Highly recommend. Just don't use Starburst as your pieces.
Or do, and then you can eat when you're done.
And then you'll have a sticky board.
Yeah. Well, don't unwrap them.
What?
Jeez,
you have to unwrap them.
Well, when you eat them. Not when you're playing with them. Anyways. All right. My last one. I'll pick a key lime pie because it's brightly colored.
Oh.
And unfortunately, it's not a crossover, Josh.
No!
Because I picked my last category to be a game Andrew hasn't played. Oh. but wants to, not just like any random game. And that would be Downforce. So this is one that I've seen a lot of times on Miniature Market, especially when the expansions were coming out, and they're just so brightly colored and they draw me in and I want to try it so bad. But I still have not pulled the trigger. It's from Restoration Games, designed by Rob Davio, and I think Wolfgang Kramer, or Kramer rather, might have been the original game, whatever that was. Whatever that original game was, he was the publisher of that. Top Race, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Anyways, it's a racing game where you're playing cards that move different car colors, and you are also bidding on who you think will win or not. So you are not any one of the cars in particular. You are watching a race happen, and you are bidding on who's going to win. So you do have a stake in who you want to win, but you might also be okay with somebody being second or third. And so I don't know. That seemed kind of like a cool little mechanism, that twist to racing game. So always wanted to try it. And it's Restoration Games usually does a good job of being kind of that blend of just one notch above intro game, which is kind of like that perfect target spot.
Yeah. All right. Well, sadly, you won the crossover battle. That was only one. My last one is going to be for those hobbyists out there who are on your list and you don't know what to get them. I recommend Terraforming Mars, the card game. Oops, Ares Expedition. Designed by Sidney Engelstein, Jacob Frixillis, and Nick Little. Published by Stronghold Games. I'm terrible at pronouncing things tonight, apparently. Anyways, so this essentially boils the complex and lengthy Terraforming Mars into a tight package, which resembles the classic game called Race for the Galaxy. So it's basically a tableau builder, but I heard the other day somebody also call it a deduction-style game because you choose which action everyone takes, and if you think someone else is going to play the same action card, you pick a different action. Kind of a cool way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
Anyways, the art is upgraded from the basic Terraforming Mars, which helps it. I will admit that there are two different versions of this game in retail. Target has the basic one. Barnes & Noble has the upgraded one with these dual-layered player boards, so take that into consideration. But anyways, this is a fantastic quick little game. Extremely challenging AI that can actually be played cooperatively against, which makes for a cool twist. So Veronica and I could potentially take on that AI.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. It retails for $40. It plays in about 45 to 60 minutes and claims to be 14+, but I think that's just to get around the criteria of this not counting as a toy game, which apparently can be taxed differently.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Regardless, Terraforming Mars, the card game / Ares Expedition is a fantastic game for any of those hobbyists on your list.
Yeah, I definitely thought about this one too. I'm just afraid to try this one because I don't want to admit that my entire Terraforming Mars is useless, and so is Race for the Galaxy. Well, I don't own Race for the Galaxy, so it's not actually relevant.
I would disagree. I've played all three now, and I will gladly play all three still.
Okay.
It doesn't replace it, say, as Castles of Burgundy. The dice game replaces Castles of Burgundy. No, I'm just kidding. I know. I think this is a fantastic game. I hate to admit it, because there was a lot of turmoil and problems with this thing coming out to retail, but I still think it's a good game.
Cool.
Well, hopefully that gives you listeners some ideas. Maybe you have people on your list that you're not quite sure what to buy. If you're already listening to a board game podcast, maybe you're inclined to step on over to Target's board game aisle and pick one of these up. And if not, hey, that's fine with us. We get zero money from Target. We tried that. They shot us. No, I'm just kidding.
But if you do work at Target, we are accepting sponsors.
And yes.
You don't need
to pay us that
much. I will
gladly wear a Target shirt during this podcast. But anyways, thanks for tuning in for another outstanding episode of Meeple Night. And before I take Andrew's thunder, how do we close our show normally?
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you in a fortnight.
Good night.
And good luck. Thanks for listening to Meeple Night. Today's episode was recorded in Charlottesville, Virginia on November 29th, 2021 and uploaded using Anchor. Our theme music is All Night by Declan DP, provided by Audio Library Plus, which provides free and safe music for content creators. For all the latest from Meeple Night, follow us on Instagram, join our Facebook group, or email us at meeplenightpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks, so until then, dream a little dream of games.